2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Chris and Kira. It's Monday the 30th of August and this is Game On. Coming up today, we're live to Portugal as the boys in green prepare to face Ronaldo. Plus some breaking news for the girls in green as equal pay is agreed for both national teams.
It really sends out the message that we are one. And I think it's a great time as well because both teams, men and women's, are about to embark on a big qualifying phase.
Plus another day, another medal for Team Ireland in Tokyo.
Nicole Turner's currently in second place. Silver medal very much in the offing. Gold for China. It is silver for Nicole Turner of Ireland. Ellen Keane took a gold medal in the 100 breaststroke. And now Nicole Turner wins Ireland's second medal in the pool in a time of 36.30 seconds. Congratulations to Nicole Turner, to the whole family, to the whole of Port Arlington, who must be absolutely delighted with that.
In Gaelic football, Darren O'Sullivan and Brendan Devaney tell us where it all went right for Tyrone. And in the Premier League, Alan Cawley and Stephen Kelly on the weekend's action.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM. Marie, it was a rather interesting weekend on the sporting front between Tyrone beating Kerry. I suppose the golf was good, the tennis starts today, there was plenty of action, Premier League, will Ronaldo sign, he passes medical today, maybe we'll have more news on that later on, but it was a huge day for the Irish ladies soccer team.
It really was. So the FAI have announced that the men's and women's senior international teams are going to receive the same match fees while on international duty. It's been a bit of a battle to get there, and I think the signs were good over the last few weeks that they would eventually reach this agreement, and now it has been announced that they have. Tony O'Donoghue is live in Portugal with the latest on this news and everything else that is happening with the men's team over there. Tony, it does feel like a huge day for this to go through and be agreed.
Yeah, it is, I think. And, you know, we have to say, looking back to 2017, when the squad went on strike then, that's had a lot to do with this, of course. But even before that, there's lots of women involved in the international scene over the years who were fighting for their right to be given visibility, to be given equal status. And equal pay is part of the way towards that. Now, I remember talking to Katie McCabe ahead of her 50th cap last April, and she was already talking at that stage about how good Seamus Coleman had been, how receptive he was to working with the women's squads. And you know, we're so lucky with our two captains, Katie and Seamus. They really are fantastic role models, and I don't think it was that difficult to get over the line. What it means is that, you know, the senior women's match fee will be increased, the men's squad have agreed a reduction. And you might say, you know, what's the difference? Not all these Irish senior men are on mega money, but Seamus Coleman, when I was speaking to him today, admitted that, you know, yeah, the Premier League wages can be ridiculous, and people play for their country, not for the money. They play for the honour. And in terms of Katie playing her club football with Arsenal, and Seamus with Everton, playing for Ireland means everything to them, and I'm quite certain they would do it for nothing. But this is about visibility, and this is about principle, and I think including Jonathan Hill, the new CEO of the FAI, he came to this with no baggage from previous regimes, no legacy issues. And Kieran Medler, who's very much seen as an honest broker, I think he's been involved with lots of players in the past, has represented them, and I think he was representing both sets of players. And they're talking about an equality of approach for future tournament qualification as well. And I think what that means is that any bonus structure that, let's say, the men got for qualification for Euro 2016 in France, that the women, in the hope that they will qualify for the next World Cup, will equally have similar bonus arrangements. Already we saw Vera Pauw's squad got what they'd never got before. For example, going to Ukraine that time, they got a charter plane, which had never happened with the women before. They were taking commercial flights, taking ages to get there where they needed to be. And, you know, when you go back to 2017, it was a lot about not just the scandal, as it turned out to be, of women having to give back their tracksuits in airport, in airports, and having to change in airport toilets. It was also about, you know, the women playing at home in the National League who were talking about reimbursement for loss of earnings for playing for your country, or talking for simple things like, you know, contributions towards gym membership or towards nutrition. So I think this is, you know, in many ways just symbolic. And the FAI managed to say today that it was, you know, an indication of a modern, progressive and inclusive sports organisation. Now, I have to say, I never thought, considering the recent past, I'd be hearing modern, progressive and inclusive when you refer to the Football Association of Ireland. But, you know, small steps. I think it's been a good day for women's football, first and foremost, but also for the FAI.
Yeah, I agree as well. And Katie McCabe made that very clear in her statement as well, Tony, the one that she released herself, that it's not just about getting paid the same, it's about being valued the same, and that parity. And you mentioned the equality of approach, but also the equality of opportunity as well, so that there is opportunity for the next generation to be treated the same. So by doing that, they're safeguarding as well the future of women's football, because we saw when things got difficult for the FAI years ago that the women's per diems were taken away straight away, and that's not going to happen again because of days like today and days like 2017 as well. And, you know, I've been critical about the men's players in the past for not being vocal enough in their support for the women's team, but to see Seamus Coleman there being announced side by side with Katie for helping to push this through, and the little bit of sacrifice that they make, okay, it's not a huge sacrifice, but it's still, I think, a really important gesture as well, that they are standing side by side the women's team, and that they recognise as well that from here on in now that they are all going to be treated the same.
I think it shows what can be achieved through unity. And as I say, I think they're two class individuals, Seamus and Katie. And maybe it's a sign and a direction for other sports to go in as well, because it is the same sport. I suppose, Ruby, it probably has happened in your sport as well, if there's more a move towards that. There was a time, I'm sure, when it wasn't the same. But for the men and women to work together in tandem with the governing bodies, that is a direction, a new direction, and perhaps the way forward. And I do think the point that Seamus was making today, he said he was a bit younger then, but he was, like all of us, shocked about the stories that came around 2017. A lot of athletes in every sport are tunnel vision, you know, they have the blinkers on and they only think of themselves and they think of their sport. But sometimes you got to get your head up and look around and help the people around you, in particular your fellow athletes. So, yeah, I think it's been an important day in that regard. This would be seen as a milestone, there's no doubt about that. And I think it's a good day for football.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that, Tony. I suppose in racing, every jockey, race, gender, didn't matter. You're all for the same riding fee, and trainers are self-employed, so they choose to set their own fees as to what they want to charge, and that's up to each individual. I suppose where racing may have been behind for a while was maybe in powerful positions within the organisations, but now you have Suzanne Ead looking to be elected CEO of HRI, so I think gender racing has definitely been a long way in front of other sports. Now, people will argue maybe the opportunity wasn't the same, but the opportunity's there for everybody. If you're good enough, you have to go and prove you're good enough in racing. And if you're good enough, you get the opportunities. But look, Tony, you are in Portugal for other reasons as well. Ireland, of course, are due to play Portugal on Wednesday evening. Adam Ida, I think, was doing interviews today, and I was quite taken by one of his remarks during a press conference he was doing earlier. He said the Irish team aren't under any pressure. I didn't quite get that.
Is this the one? You know, it's the three games in the window. I mean, look, I think when the fixtures came out, you know, this week was always going to be crucial. Now, we have not been helped by our two losses in qualifying so far. And it's interesting when, you know, we put in a really good shift away to Serbia. That game ended 3-2. But I do think that the effort put in Belgrade was probably reflected when we came back to Dublin and had that horror show, that horror result, certainly, with defeat to once Minnows Luxembourg. And I was only reflecting, I spoke to Seamus earlier and talking about that. He was as angry and as emotional as I have ever seen him in that post-match interview, because it simply wasn't good enough. And he said he knew that the Irish fans and the Irish public wouldn't be prepared to stand over that and stand for that. And he wanted to make it clear that the players were unhappy with that. But having said that, you've got this week Portugal with the Ronaldos and with the, you know, Bruno Fernandes and with the Bernardo Silvas and Diogo Jotas and all of the scoring threats that they have. You know, would you nearly consider letting that one slide, because the chances are we're not going to beat Portugal in the form that they have and the talent that they have, in order to try and garner some points a few days later at home to Azerbaijan and a few days again at home to Serbia? Now, you can imagine the classic football response to that would be take every game as it comes and on its merits. I can see where Adam Ida meant, you know, no one is expecting us to win, so therefore, you know, we'll have a go. But if Adam Ida gets selected, he's going to have to work harder than he's ever done, because anybody up front is the first line of defence. And I'm glad at least that many of our defenders or our likely starters in defence have been getting game time, the likes of Seamus Coleman, who, you know, he was taken down in the box the other day against Brighton. And when I saw that in Match of the Day, I was really worried. Told me he was worried as well, but he thinks it's coming through okay. But great to see Shane Duffy playing games. Dara O'Shea playing regularly again as well. But there's no doubt about it, we were up against it. I mean, you know, anybody would say that Portugal are in the box seat in this regard. And anybody would say that if Ronaldo plays, and he is the star attraction, of course, and we know how selfish he can be and all the great strikers are a bit, he is going for the world record 110th international goal. And he's on 109. And he'd be looking at Ireland going, I think I'll make the record here. And I think that's the way he is. That's the way he's been throughout his career. So Adam Eden might say, well, he's not under pressure. But I think that Seamus Coleman or Matt Doherty or Shane Duffy or Dara O'Shea will probably be under pressure. And whoever else joins him in the Ireland team on Wednesday evening.
Alan Cawley is with us here in studio as well. It was just announced before we came on air that Conor Hourihan has joined Sheffield United, so positive move for him. But Al, how do Stephen Kenny and co approach this game, taking on a team like Portugal, probably not at their best right now, manage under a little bit of pressure as well?
Yeah, I don't think they'll let it slide anyway, as Tony was suggesting there, and to be honest with you. And I don't think they can. I think they have to go into it, Murray. We know how bullish Stephen Kenny can be, obviously, no matter who the opposition is. And he's probably, you go back to even in his Dundalk days when he was going into Europa League matches, he always spoke very positively no matter who the opposition were. So the fact that obviously it's Portugal, in terms of Tony's right that the expectation is that we're not going to get anything, and I think he's right about what Adam Mead was probably referencing there as well, in the sense that they're under no pressure because nobody expects us to get anything. I still think they have to approach it obviously with some sort of positive attitude, but also the fact that he watched him during the Euros, and I'm sure Stephen will have to come up with some sort of a plan. The question is whether they can implement that plan and get a positive result, Marie, but they're certainly up against it. You look at this week as well, as Tony mentioned, the fact that obviously Saturday and Tuesday, they're probably even more crucial, because the fact that I don't think they'll get anything from the game on Wednesday night. I don't think anyone else thinks they will, to be honest with you. But if he doesn't get points in the other games, considering you go back to actually what happened against Luxembourg, I think he'll become under serious pressure then, Stephen.
Alan, I think Tony is quite right. You have to be realistic. You're saying positive, but you have to be realistic about this. So do you just defend, shore up the hatches, play for a nil all if you can, and get the hell out of there?
No, they'll be realistic, Ruby, in the sense that I'm sure they'll like, everyone from the outside thinks they can't get anything, but they will go in with a plan, and they'll go in and believe in, like, if you turned up for a race thinking you're not going to go in, what's the point in even going for it? So they're not going to go in being realistic thinking they're Portugal and we're just going to roll over and let them win, because everybody expects that to happen. They will have a plan, they will have some sort of a structure in place. Obviously they'll have to be very defence minded, because you would expect the pattern of the game that Portugal will dominate possession and with the players that they have. But I don't think for one second that you can just let a game slide no matter who the opposition is, and I don't think that's what's going to happen whatsoever. Like, we've gone up against teams before and everybody has, I suppose, expect before we went in that we wouldn't get any results and come out with positive results. You look at Germany here, and I was at the game and we got battered for 90 minutes and one kick up the pitch and Shane Long scores. So anything can happen in football, so you'll never let a game slide. But obviously they're under no illusions whatsoever about the task in hand, and I'm sure the players are fully aware of that as well.
Okay, well, we will be building up to this game a little bit later on as well with Alan and Stephen Kelly and tomorrow, and we will have live commentary on Wednesday evening. Tony O'Donoghue, thank you so much for joining us from Portugal. Alan, we'll be chatting to you a little bit later. We're going to take a very quick break now and then head to Paralympics.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It's now time to turn our attention to the Paralympics. Another great day for Ireland. Port Harlington's Nicole Turner spoke to Darren Frahill after she won her silver medal today in the S6 50 metre butterfly, a fourth medal for Team Ireland in Tokyo.
Nicole Turner, you're holding your head, you're smiling. Do you believe what has just happened there? Do you realise what's happened?
To be honest, it hasn't sunk in at all. Coming into Tokyo, I suppose looking back on Rio being so close to that bronze medal, the aim after Rio was to just get on the podium in Tokyo, but I never in a million years thought it'd be silver. I thought it'd be a fight for bronze.
I'm not sure if the viewers at home can see this. JJ is on camera, but you're actually shaking.
I mean, I think I was shaking before the race even started. to be honest. But yeah, no, even if the past 5 years, they have been pretty challenging, but I suppose the extra year did do me justice.
Tell us about the race, because I think that has been one of the most competitive races we've seen in the pool. There was nothing between the top five, six.
Oh, completely. Especially within the past 2 years, even like World Champs, I was bronze medal. But then, because of the way Paralympics works, like people can come up and down in classifications, and there is new people in there that are new to the S6 category. So even coming into this thing, I had an aim on a high. I aimed high to get a medal, but to be honest, to reach the podium now with the competitiveness in there, it's not sunk in.
Tell us about the work that has gone into getting this medal. You're only 19, you've put your education on hold, I think, for the last 2 years, actually. The commitment, tell us about the commitment.
Let's be honest, it's not just for me. I'm only going to name, as a collective, three special people. My coach, Dave Malone, has given up every hour of the day to come in all sorts of times to train me. My S&C coach, Niamh Buffini, took me one-to-one for the past 2 years now. And then my mom and my dad, but I'm going to say my dad has a full-time job, but my mom, she's the one that drives me to and from training every day. So I suppose without her, I won't be standing here today.
Well, we have a message from your mother. She was on live on a programme before the final, and she was actually giving out Nicole. She says, will you text her, please? What's your message for her now?
I'm sorry, I'll start texting you now. Yeah, see, she gives out to me because I send my brothers the odd group, like we have a group chat, and I reply to that the odd time, and then she's like, how come you have time to reply to them and not me? But to be honest, I'm done now, so she can talk to me all she wants.
Just to finish up, Nicole, what does this mean for you? A silver medal against such a high class field, and you're only 19.
To be honest, it hasn't sunk in. It's honestly, it feels like a dream come true. This is honestly the best day of my life. I never thought, like, to even get to Tokyo this year, like, but to be honest, to be on the podium in a silver medal, it's for everyone at home, it's not for me.
I'm laughing at her, Marie, talking about the WhatsApp group with her brothers in it and everything. When we interviewed her, the only person she mentioned was her mother. Like, her mother was her best friend, and she couldn't even text her. I was thinking, Nicole, come on, your mum is the one who brought you everywhere. But anyway, meanwhile, our Paralympic superstar, Jason Smith, kept his unbeaten golden run going at the weekend. And we thought you might like to hear this snippet from an interview he did with us in February on how to stay unbeaten for so long.
And I always think a funny kind of mindset around training is, you know, if you decide tomorrow to not train, you always think about what you lose. But, you know, the flip side of it is, actually, by not training tomorrow, do we ever think about what we might gain by not training? And it's not training because I'm lazy. It's knowing when the time is to pull back. It's knowing when the time to rest, or, you know, I've had an incredible couple of weeks, so it's time to just, you know, ease back a bit, because I know I can't sustain. So for sure, you've got to be a lot more in tune with yourself and your body.
So, Jason, when you put all that into practice, then do you aim to be at X position in April, be so far in May? Does it work like that? Will you be peaked in June and back off and freshen up for August? What way would you go about it?
For me, it all comes down to August and making sure things are right. And like an example, we're in February and I know I might be at a 11.5 second 100 metre pace. And then March, I may go down to 11 second 100 metre pace. And then I may go down to 10.8 and 10.6. So I'm continually slowly dropping or increasing the speed, but then reducing the volume.
Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On with Marie and Ruby. So Jason Smith mentioned they're running 10.6 in August in his interview. He had a plan and he stuck to it. Well, he won gold at the weekend running 10.53. So very, very close. He even went a little bit better. Now it is time to turn our attention to Gaelic football. Darren O'Sullivan, former Kerry footballer, joins us on the line. Darren, the thing about making predictions on radio is that there is no escaping them when they go horribly wrong. And just to quote you back, you said that Kerry would win by 7. You wanted to say 9, but you were being conservative and you went with 7 points. Did you underestimate them? Did the whole of Kerry and most of the country underestimate Tyrone?
Yeah, I'm definitely here to eat a bit of humble pie. I got the text this morning. I said, do I avoid it? Do I hit it straight on? But no, I got it badly wrong. I don't know. I just kind of went into it thinking Tyrone have had 4 weeks that have been badly interrupted. They haven't trained the whole pile as unit. And even though Kerry were a bit stop-start with training, I was thinking they've had 5 weeks to prepare for Tyrone. We all know what Tyrone are going to bring. They're going to be well-prepared for this. I just assumed, to be honest, that Kerry would be in a better place. And I'd be honest, I didn't see both performances coming. I couldn't believe how poor Kerry were in their decision-making, but I couldn't get over how Tyrone kept up that level of intensity for so long. How, look, they just looked like they were preparing for Kerry for months. They had their matchup spot on and they were outstanding on the day.
Darren, when you say you were surprised at how poor Kerry's decision making was, what decisions do you mean?
Well, you look at all that. Well, I won't even call them goal chances. They were half chances, I think. But there were scores left behind where it possibly could have been goals, but there were definitely points. And in the first quarter against Cork, I felt Kerry were impatient and they were too eager to get goals. And throughout the whole game, they came in from angles where the shot for goal probably wasn't on. It was a case of get the scoreboard tipping on and punch it over, tap it over. And they must have done it 4 or 5 times where they tried to cut in or look for an extra pass or went for goal when it wasn't on. And there were turnovers. And I can't remember what the exact, I think it was 2-8 or 2-9 Tyrone got from turnovers. It was a bit like rinse and repeat. And what they were doing wasn't the correct thing. And the strange thing for me was, especially with the game, is now you have water breaks at halftime, a lot of water breaks. So you have a lot of time to highlight the issues, the mistakes that you're making and correct them. And Kerry never did. We just kept doing the same things because we owned the ball for stages. We dominated midfield. We had plenty of opportunities. I think we had more scoring opportunities than Tyrone. But I suppose you put it down to Tyrone's good defending as well. They defended in numbers. They sensed the danger and it was selfless defending. He was leaving their own men to double team and treble team Kerry fellas at times. Kerry never did that.
Darren, it was 2-9 from turnovers. They were turned over 35 times in the game, which is pretty, pretty scandalous. All right, Brendan Devaney joins us now on the line as well. Brendan, I know that you saw Tyrone play a couple of times this year up close and personal, as I did as well against Donegal in the Ulster Championship. So I actually wasn't that surprised when I saw that the display that they were able to put on and also the strength of their bench, which they've used so well this season. What were your thoughts on that Tyrone performance?
Yeah, listen, Maria, it was coming. I've been afraid of this Tyrone performance from a Donegal perspective and this Tyrone season for a long time, because I think towards the end of the hard era, there was definitely a feeling that Tyrone were playing under a crowd. It was under a cloud. I was looking at the body language, how they were approaching games and how Donegal was getting the better of them. And looking at their squad, I mean, they have a phenomenal squad, way more strength and depth than anybody in Ulster, and you're seeing under Logan and Duher this coming to the rise now. And it's funny how history is written by the victors, because I appreciate where Darren's coming from, and there's been a real analytical look at Kerry, where they went wrong, what they did. But at the end of the day, it was a draw game. And even without Clifford in extra time, down by five, you know, Kerry still summoned the wherewithal to come back, even with those killer goals. I mean, conceding three goals and not scoring any, to be only lose by a point, you could sum it up a different way. Now, I know you're coming from a Kerry perspective, Darren, because surely they knew carrying the ball into tackle is what Tyrone wanted. They wanted Kerry to run at them. They wanted them to win those tight areas. And you just felt ever since 03, when Tyrone really got about Kerry, they still have this thing where, when it comes down to it, those crunch games. But I think just weighing it up before it as well, the previous Tyrone teams that had come to Croke Park and set up deep, they were picked apart, particularly by Dublin in 18, really laughed at them and just played them out of the game, and it was a bit embarrassing. This is a different team. This has mixed it up better, and what you've seen was there was a real passion and a real fight and a real togetherness. And as you're right, the energy levels were huge, and much like Mayo in the previous semi, you know, the energy levels were just unbelievable, and the togetherness of the teams, and as well, both teams built a platform and not conceding goals, and I think that's a huge thing going into these games, particularly after the routing that Kerry had given Tyrone in the league. That was the big one. Now, they did ride their luck a bit, but no one expected it to be 3-0 on the goal. So that said, it was amazing that Kerry hung in there as much as they did, but yeah, loads of question marks about how that performance could have been better from their perspective.
Darren, when you look and you think about it, I thought watching it completely as a neutral, the commitment from both teams was exceptional, and you couldn't say one wanted it more than the other, or one was hungrier than the other, because they ran each other into the ground. But I got the feeling, looking at it, there was this whole new psychology of, when plan A isn't working, just do plan A better. There was no adaptation from Kerry. That's how I saw it. Am I wrong?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think people saying Tyrone wanted it more is pure rubbish. I think both teams, you could see the way their fellas were dropping, were cramped, they ran themselves into the ground. It was, look, I think going into, we all wanted this battle, and that's what we got. Like, I suppose I'm going to look at it from a Kerry point of view. We coughed up so much, and it was a case of this was plan A. First of all, I don't know why that was plan A. For me, they kept the pitch too, they were too narrow, they kept running into traffic, and that's exactly what Tyrone want. They're one of the best getting bodies around you, and their game up to now has been based on keeping it. It was one of these games where you're watching, you're just, why? You keep asking yourself, why are they doing this? And like, you'd have to ask questions of the management team. They're watching it. They can see the issues. And the problem I have is, we have water breaks. We don't want the water breaks, but we have them. And it's a great way of stopping momentum and reevaluating the game and changing things up. We didn't do it. Like I said about decision-making, we found ourselves in good positions quite a lot and made the wrong decision. An extra pass, an extra play, instead of keeping the scoreboard tipping over. And like Brendan said, it, they conceded three goals in the semi-final. You're always going to be up against it. The character of the boys to keep going. Your main man was gone off. You're down 5 points. They kept tipping away. But they were just lacking something. They had no, like you said, they had no plan B. There was no way of mixing it up. Even when Tommy went in full forward, I don't think he got one ball inside. I think one ball was kicked in. I think it was the last kick of the actual 70 minutes, and it was a poor kick. Was miles away from him. So you'd have to question what the actual plan was, because the game plan I saw Kerry playing was never going to work against this Tyrone team or any Tyrone team.
Darren, lots of people are questioning the management, and we know as well that Peter Keane has 3 years and that is up now, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. But when you look at it though, like 3 years ago, they were really close against Dublin. They lost in a replay. Last year was that goal in the last minute against Cork. And then, like, this game was really close as well. So they're getting to a certain stage in big games, but they're not able to close it out. And it's almost strange to be sitting here listening to a narrative that is questioning Kerry's mentality, when what you would usually associate with Kerry and football is winning big games.
Yeah, and look, this is going on.
going on a while. We've gotten so close, and we haven't been able to close out this. Look, it's going on. We haven't won All Ireland since 2014, and it is a bit of an issue. No, to be fair, going into the game, I think Brendan said it. Like, Tyrone are obviously a top team, and Kerry lost by a point, not playing well. I can't remember any other game where I can only pick out three or four of the players that really played to their potential yesterday. That's a lot of bodies playing below par. You could put it down to so many different reasons. So, look, they're not a million miles away, but there has to be a reason why we're not getting over the line. We were 2 points up, playing poorly with a couple of minutes to go, and we're conceding a sucker punch goal. We have to find a reason. Is it a mentality thing? Is it physical? Is it energy-wise? That we can't close these games out, because we have been in the position to win big games and we haven't done it. So, look, if you're the management team, you're going to live and die by the sword. Do I think it was all the management's issue? No, I don't. I think the players will have to take some responsibility, because a lot of them played poorly. But it is a big decision they're going to have to make. Obviously, I'm not sure what the story is with the management. I'd assume Peter Keane would want one more year with the team. Whether he'll get it is another thing. Who steps up to the plate to take over if he does go? There's a lot of questions to be asked. We'll probably lose a few from that squad as well. And for me, one of the best players in the field the last day was David Moore, and he's 33. I thought he had a brilliant game. He's a fellow I'd be, if I'm the current manager or somebody coming in, I'd be straight on the phone to him saying, look, give me one more year.
Yeah, he was outstanding until he pulled his hamstring. But Brendan, Matty Donnelly used the advanced mark, and a few more players did. Do you, we had Darren giving out about the water breaks, do you think the advanced mark is working the way the GAA had interpreted it, and did it add anything to yesterday's game?
Yeah, listen, I always think, yeah, Ruby, it's just by mistake, you know. It's one of those things, if it decides a game, and it did decide the Ulster final, remember McCurry's mark late on was the winning score, so I just don't think it's not. It's like, if that game, God forbid, had went to penalties, Ruby, again, it's like our own county final might be penalties up here. I mean, striking the ball on the ground, a penalty in the game, I understand, and you'll have a penalty kicker, and it's a three-pointer. He has to have that opportunity. But as last, they hit penalties, it's nothing to do with this. And the mark as well. I think at that point, Ruby, the GAA was so afraid of all the blanket defence, and the game was going down the Swanee in terms of entertainment. It was absolutely shocking, some of the games we're seeing. But the game itself is evolved. The forward play has evolved, and you've still got defensive minded teams, and teams are still sitting under the same numbers. But you have now just players, and you've seen it. Like we mentioned, McCurry, you know, he was very well marshalled by Tom O'Sullivan yesterday, but in vital times towards the end of the game, he came on the loop, and you're seeing that a lot. Players are coming on the loop now, kicking balls over the bar, and everybody's kicking it over the bar. Like, they're throwing full back line, all coming up the pitch and scoring. So I don't think it's something we need now, and I think it was the GAA, a kind of knee-jerk reaction to what was happening tactically. I think it's something now should be put out of our game, because, as I say, it's something from, you know, Aussie rules, which is, it completely changes the dynamic of the game, so I think it's something should go.
And Brendan, when you look at the emphasis, and Kerry were at it yesterday, of that extra pass, trying to get inside the D, get as close as they can before they take a shot, do you think teams need to be putting more emphasis back on players to be able to shoot from further out the pitch, inside the 45 to the 30?
Yeah, I think that has happened. I mean, that's why the scores have gone up. There's so many fantastic players, and I think what's happened is, if you think of it, it's like an arms race between the defenders and the forwards. When the defenders were protected in blanket defence, they stopped being man-to-man markers, and now the forwards in that closed environment of space have had to get better and better, and everybody joining the ranks have had to get better. So I think we are seeing that. But yesterday, the fight, so there was some fantastic battles over the pitch too. I mean, Myler, Paddy O'Shea was a fantastic. Conor Myler, I didn't know he could play to that level. I mean, he had the game of his life. You know, as I said, O'Sullivan, McCurry, Sean O'Shea and Hamsey, and of course Clifford and McNamee. There were some serious duels going around there. And just on that, you know, those players who can man-mark people, particularly the likes of O'Sullivan and Hamsey and McNamee, they are like hen's teeth now in the GAA. And I think that's a big platform for Tyrone going forward. You know, it's something that a lot of counties just don't have. They don't have those kind of old style man markers who can get about people and put a squeeze on them, and that's why I think is part of this Tyrone success going into that. And plus, I mean, it was such a brave move of Logan and Doher to concede the kick, the free kicks or the kick outs of Kerry, and to go long with theirs. You know, that could have been undoing of them, and they were really playing Russian roulette with that one. And as I said at the very start, you know, it looks now that it was a master plan, but really that could have backfired on them, as it was in a very tight game. They just come out with that 1 point victory.
Well, we'll probably find out in the All-Ireland final whether it was a master plan or something that happened a little bit by accident. And we did see James Horan and Kieran MacDonald, Darren, sitting in watching on as Tyrone put on that unbelievable display against Kerry yesterday. What will they have learned from watching it, and what will Tyrone need to do differently?
Well, I suppose from a Mayo point of view, I think they would have preferred to play Kerry, especially with the goals Kerry coughed up. I think their running game would have caused Kerry no end of trouble. But they probably would have learned that running and running and running against Tyrone doesn't work. They're going to have to make the pitch big. Mayo's game, I think, would have suited Kerry. I don't think it'll suit playing Tyrone. So they're going to have to come with something different. Like what we said earlier, what Ruby was saying, we seem to have a plan A but no plan B. Mayo are going to have to learn to mix it up, find a better use of Aidan O'Shea throughout the game. So I think there's a big game in him. I think the semi-final would have frustrated him. They need to find a good use of him, get him on ball in dangerous areas, like Brendan was saying, have players coming off the loop. I think that's going to be the challenge for Mayo. How can they, their best form of attack has always been running, but running against Tyrone, they're the best at nearly shepherding you into cul-de-sac, into two or three, and then they break at pace. And even yesterday, like, I don't remember ever Kerry getting a counter-attack at pace on Tyrone. So Tyrone are brilliant at that. So going into it, I think Mayo are going to have to be looking at plan A, plan B, plan C. But I think if Tyrone come with that same level of intensity and that elastic, it'll be very hard to stop.
The line is a little bit bad, but it's probably a good time to finish up. And just before we do, very quickly, Brendan, just looking ahead to that All-Ireland final, we saw Fergal Logan in the midfield, or in the middle of the field with his team, and you could see him mouthing to them, 2 weeks, All-Ireland final. They were already straight focused on that Mayo game.
Yeah, I just seen the headline that you, and fair play to you, Marie, you never mentioned anything to do with COVID-19 in this whole talk. The only V word worth mentioning now, Doher and Logan said, is victory, and that is the headline that's coming at us today from the two guys. So listen, fair play to them. You know, the whole talk all season was Dublin Kerry. Could Kerry be a team to topple Dublin? Listen, Tyrone and Mayo have ripped up the script, and listen, it's a 50-50, and just what Darren was saying there, I think the power running, I think, that Mayo have could be maybe at another level. The Kerry's even, you know, the season that Ruan and Loftus is having, of course, Keegan. I just think the last day, Conroy and O'Donoghue just showed some brilliant sparks of play too. And I think, never mind any history, I think Mayo are ready for this one and are coming in on this. And I think it's anything could happen on the day. It's a real 50-50, but really looking forward to it, and something new, of course, after the Dubs dominance.
I said Fergal Loughan was saying 2 weeks to the All-Ireland, so there'd be no party last night. Darren O'Sullivan and Brendan Devaney, thanks a million for your time. We're going to take a break.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Alan Kelly is back in studio and Stephen Kelly joins us on the line. Alan, Leeds United are in advanced talks at Manchester United over the signing of winger Daniel James. Is there any chance Ole Gunnar Solskjaer could chuck Fred in as well?
And there'd be a couple others I throw in as well, Ruby, to be honest with you. But if they get rid of Daniel James, I think that's good business for United. I don't think he's going to make any impact. And obviously the signing of Sancho reinforces that, because he's not going to play. And you look at Greenwood, how good he's been at the moment, Rashford to come back as well, Ronaldo to come in. So I think that's good business if they can offload him. But I agree totally, there's two or three others that I'd like to offload. And I think the key thing for them, like we saw again yesterday, Ruby, that centre midfield area, that's a major issue for them going forward. You can have all the attackers in the world if you want, but actually getting a shape of a team and getting a player in there that's going to give you the protection in front of the back four, but that's also going to maybe start attacks and be able to free up Pogba. Because if you play Pogba in a two like he did yesterday alongside Fred, I don't think that suits him at all or the team. The reason he's been so good in the last few weeks is because he's been a lot freer more advanced, and I think that's the only place that you can play him. But if you're playing him alongside Fred and giving him responsibility to be tracking back and to be also trying to be offensive, I don't think that's good for the team at all.
Well, given the display of Pogba and Fred in that 4-2-3-1 that he seems determined to play, you would have to think, Stephen Kelly, that they do need to buy a defensive midfielder. And you know, I heard Robbie Keane say it after the game in the chat, that they do need that number six and they need one badly.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been screaming out for a player, like a really solid defensive midfield player that all the top teams seem to have. Like, you look at Chelsea with Kante and Jorginho, that does that role as well. You look at City, they're Fernandinho, and then they have a ready-made replacement in Rodri. So every team, if you want to have numbers of players forward, they use that protection for their back forward or their back two, who often is left back, so the rest of the team can join in with bombing on fullbacks. And you know, you just haven't had that player. And if you want to get the best out of Pogba, he said, you know, like Alan just nailed it, you can't give him those responsibilities. And that sounds terrible with a player of his quality, but you can't, because you have to allow him to be up to field, because he doesn't disciplinary when he has to track back runners, you know, those things, he lets them go, and that's when he lets himself down. He's at his best when he's, you know, when he has someone like Kante with France behind him, and that he's a much better player.
He's just creative. He doesn't like to do the hard work. He's a creative-minded fella, that Paul Pogba. But having said that, look, I thought Wolves were lucky not to get a result at Spurs last week. And that Traore, he's some bit of stuff.
Yeah, Wolves were brilliant, Ruby, to be fair, throughout the whole game. And they've been like that since the start, and they've no points. They've been unlucky in the games. But yesterday, certainly only for De Gea, they probably would have got points. They missed a couple of chances.
And Wan-Bissaka, like, you have to say. And Wan-Bissaka.
And Wan-Bissaka, yeah. Good defending at the end to clear the one off the line as well, to be fair to him. But no, it was good. It was good performance from De Gea, and I agree with you totally. I felt Wolves did enough to get not just a point, maybe 3 points as well. United were lucky to get out of there, but still, to be fair to Greenwood, I think as well, if you're to study the incident, I thought it was a free kick. I'm not sure what Stephen thinks, but Pogba's way, he's too high, he's over the ball, and he's lucky he didn't make more of a connection with Ruben Neves, but he actually did make contact with him.
He
clipped him, Ruby. Come on.
He missed.
He clipped him.
Ruby's definition of clipping someone out would probably be a bit different.
But he's
to yours,
so high, he's off. He's reckless in the challenge.
That's why he missed him, because he was so high.
And then for the ball, like the keeper should have saved. The keeper should have saved Greenwood's shot as well. So United were very lucky yesterday, and like we obviously had the chat last week in terms of Solskjaer and things going forward, and now to have Ronaldo in, there's major improvements needed still in that team.
What about Varane, Stephen? How do you think he performed? Because sometimes it takes a while for people to adjust to the Premier League.
Yeah, he did okay, and it's again exposing him as well. And I think Solskjaer has got in his head that he can probably do that with Varane, because he's pacey and he's quick and he eats up the ground, and he's such an experienced defender. But I still think even modern day centre backs, even though Varane is a superstar winner, he always has protection in front of him. He always has players that dictate things, and I think he's a player that he's happy to go into wide areas and cover defensively, and I think he did well. But I think he would like to have the protection in front of him, and I think United would be a much better setup if they have someone there just to, and I know you're speaking for Anne, the amount of money they spent on him and what the world class players, World Cups and Champions Leagues, but these players operate better when there's someone protecting them, which is crazy to think that, but that's what they do.
Ruby, on Friday, Alan had a right go at poor Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and said that he should be gone and that Manchester United won't really win anything with him in charge. Actually, Manchester United tweeted over the weekend that Ole has the second highest win percentage of United managers after 100 top flight games in charge. Ruby, as a Manchester United fan, what are your current thoughts on Ole?
Marie, I was in a new camp when he scored against Barcelona, so Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, I'm afraid, as long as he wants to stay there. I was a Ryan Giggs fan, I was an Ole Gunnar Solskjaer fan. I couldn't have had any of the rest of them that came in between them, around them, before them, or after them, but those two will do me just fine. So we'll move swiftly on to Liverpool. I have a bit of loyalty, Alan, there's just no
PR spin is all that tweet is. PR spin. What's winning percentage if there's no cups or trophies at Man United?
That's a very good statement. I completely agree with you. But look, we'll move on to Liverpool-Chelsea. I mean, Liverpool had 24 shots. Chelsea only had 6, yet it still ended up 1-1. So explain that one to me.
Yeah, I thought this was a great game, to be honest with you, Ruben. I know the red card kind of spoilt it a little bit, but just I thought it was fascinating, the tactical side of it from both sides. And to be fair to Chelsea, what I took from it after the match, because for that period, about 15, 20 minutes after half time, Liverpool threw everything at Chelsea and it withstood that kind of onslaught. And then they actually grew and they looked even threatening once they got over that kind of first period of 20 minutes in the second half. I thought they were in total control. Like we spoke about maybe the defensive midfielder that's missing at United. You look at the performance of Jorginho and how good he is now for Chelsea and obviously in the Euros as well. And even just winning free kicks and just soaking up a bit of pressure, killing the clock. They were just absolutely brilliant, I thought. Obviously, the roads are looking a little bit. I thought Liverpool were quite good as well. But I just felt the organisation of Chelsea, particularly in that second half, and how strong they finished the game as well. And even you look at what it meant to them after the match, they knew themselves how big a point that might be come the end of the season. And I just felt, looking at it, it was like what we had suggested pre-season in the fact that these are going to be contenders, both of them teams. So it was good to see a heavyweight clash like that and live up to the billing as well. I thought it was a great game.
Yeah, and Stephen, what impressed me about them is that we know how good they are defensively, and we could see when they're under pressure how they're able to hold out, and it says a huge amount about their title credentials. But to be able to see that relationship of a top three now, like Lukaku, Havertz and Mount, to be able to see that developing on the field of play during that game was really, really interesting. And, you know, we talk about Liverpool's front three, but I think Chelsea are going to have something to say about having the best top three in this season.
I did lose you a bit there, Marie, so I can't really answer every single thing you asked because I missed some of it. But if, the gist of it will be, well, yeah, I think with Chelsea, I think definitely their credentials are higher now after that game. It was just, yeah, we know defensively they can be solid, but the way they're able to adjust and tactically, the manager, like that when me and Alan, you're talking about Solskjaer, you just don't think Solskjaer would have that about him to do what Tuchel did when he adjusted the team. They adjusted to the shape, the formation. Azpilicueta was able to go from a right side centre back position to a wing back position and, you know, adapt to that really quickly. But then they did have a threat going forward. And when you have someone like Lukaku, whose hold of play has improved and who's always a threat, and for me, it just showed that when they're against the likes of City, who will bombard them and probably have mass possession, that they'll be able to withstand that and then go the other way and cause them loads of problems. So for me, their credentials are they're up there, and I just think they're going to be a force to be reckoned with throughout this course of the season.
Reece James had to go, did he?
I thought so, Ruby, yeah. To be fair, it hits his knee first, so obviously you have a little bit of sympathy for him, and then bounces up onto his arm. But it's the second motion. If you look at his arm, he almost in that panic mode kind of scoops. He tries to move the arm forward and scoop the ball up. So he was unlucky. It kind of spoiled the game a little bit. You didn't want to see someone get sent off, but it was a definite penalty. And the rules say, if you stop a ball on the line with a handball, you have to get it sent off.
Yeah, it's a hard enough one to argue. Spurs are top of the table, Stephen. I don't think they've probably gotten as much credit as they deserve because there has been so much focus on the Harry Kane saga. But now that has all settled down and they have 3 wins from 3 and sitting pretty in number one spot.
Yeah, nice. Except I'm kind of glad going to the radar. Don't talk too much about us. We'll be off there soon enough. So just keep it low key. But no, again, going about their business, you know, attacking wise, the fact that Kane's staying, you know, I didn't think it was going to happen. Genuinely thought he'd be gone, but delighted that they've been able to hold on to him. And, you know, again, like I said, Levy had all the cards. He was the man that was going to dictate what was going to happen. If they weren't going to get the finances from him they wanted, he wasn't going to go, and that's as simple as that. But the fact that he's back on board, you know, everything be forgiven with the fans, Son doing what Son does, and then Højbjerg is just excellent, and he offers that protection, you know, that you were talking about. Sanchez and Dyer started off last season really well together, but this year looked good. I just think there's frailties there with them going forward, but Højbjerg makes up a lot of for their kind of discrepancies and what they get wrong. But I think, you know, can they be in the top four? Hopefully. With Kane still at the helm, there's a chance, but the teams around them have pressed on and moved on, so it's going to be a big ask. But I just think it's nice for them to be top of the table.
But Stephen, when you looked at Harry Kane, he didn't take a free kick, which you would have taken in the past, and he should have scored. Is he a little bit off the pace?
Possibly, but you know, he started the Euros really slow, and I think that was just distraction from everything going on. There's no doubt about it, there's a distraction there as well now, and he's just been, I'm sure it will take from just to get up and run and get a goal, and he'll be back to the way he normally was. I think as much as he's tried to get out, and he's probably dug his heels in and threw the toys out of pram slightly, he is a professional. I think from everything I know, but I've ever heard from around the ground, he takes everything really seriously. He concentrates on everything he does, and he's not the type of person to not give everything. So I think he'll be back in scoring form soon enough, like he always does.
Stephen Kelly, thank you so much for joining us. And now just before we finish up, Alan Colley, you were at the Dublin Derby, Bowes Shamrock Rovers, big win for Bowes over the rivals.
I always told Ruby Walsh I'd bring him to a Dublin derby, Bowes against Shamrock Rovers, and this is the one he should have been at, Marie, but he has to come to the next one, because these games are unbelievable. Over the last 3 or 4 years, what they've delivered, both on and off the pitch, the atmosphere, the action on the pitch, and yesterday was no different. Bohemians, who have had a brilliant summer, obviously, with the European stuff, they were absolutely brilliant. A young team, energetic, full of life, play with an enthusiasm. Keith Long and Trevor Crawley have done a brilliant job there, and the top of the champion Shamrock Rovers, and deservedly so as well, destroyed the Marie in the second half. Two great goals, Ali Coote, and at young Andy Lyons, who's going away with the 21s as well. Watch out for him, he's going to have a great career. Young Dawson Devoy as well, Ross Tierney also. It was a brilliant day, brilliant atmosphere, and a brilliant win for Bohemians.
And what does that do for Shamrock Rovers then? Championship credentials, seeing as I picked you up on it last week.
Yeah, well, looking at them, to be fair, Ruby, they were very disappointing. They obviously crashed out of Europe during the week on a bit of a whimper as well, and yesterday they were well beaten. So I think for the other teams that are obviously chasing them, it gives them hope. I think Bohemians are one of the best in the league. I've said that for a long time. They've been absolutely brilliant. The only thing that killed Bohemians was the bad start that they had, because they lose, Ruby, they lose their best players every year. It's just the way they, obviously, the structure of the club. But now they're on a sound footing. It looks like they're going to keep all these players and be able to build, because they've serious potential in that team. And I think they're the closest challengers to Shamrock Rovers, and the only ones really that can put it up to them, as they have proved in recent matches. But yesterday they were absolutely brilliant.
I just realised, sorry Marie, it was a cup match yesterday, wasn't even a league match.
Yeah. I actually don't know what you said. So
yeah,
anyway.
But for the league as well, it does kind of give them
it's no impact on it.
Well, we will have that quarter final.
You're trying to dig
draw.
Me out, Alan, but you can get away. I made a mess of it. It's okay.
Right. We will have that quarter final cup draw here on the show tomorrow, so everybody tune in.